come along as the U.S. military prepares to take a long walk off Joe Biden's short pier. Hey, everybody, I'm Steve Green with Bill Whittle and Scott Ott. This is Right Angle, brought to you by the members of BillWhittle.com. Gentlemen, I don't know if you saw this in Joe Biden's very loud State of the Union address last week, but he announced a new humanitarian aid mission to the genocidal organization known as Hamas that is going to deliver even more food and humanitarian supplies to the Gaza Strip. This time, instead of airdrops, he's ordered an army vessel to the Eastern Med, where they will build a pier so that just shiploads of supplies can be brought into the Gaza Strip, where, of course, there's currently a war going on since October 7. Bill, the U.S. Central Command announced that on Saturday, U.S. Army vessel General Frank S. Besson from the 7th Transportation Brigade, 3rd Expeditionary Sustainment Command, 18 Airborne Corps, departed Langley en route to the Eastern Med less than 36 hours after President Biden announced his new policy. Bill, we know these supplies, Hamas will get them. Biden has promised no boots on the ground, which means no control over where the food goes. If you are Israel, if you're part of Bibi Netanyahu's war cabinet, are you right now having any thoughts other than diverting troops away from the main action to secure the coastline and frustrate your ally, the United States, from committing this mission?
No, I don't see any reason why Israel would do that. I'll just give you my hot take on this, Steve, because I had not heard this story before you mentioned it. My first thought on this was, gee, it seems like a big pier would be a nice thing for a city to have, especially if you're located on an ocean or a sea like the Mediterranean. That was my first thought. It'd be nice to have a big pier so you could unload supplies and trade goods and bring in food and all the rest of it. My second thought was, well, why don't they have a large pier anywhere in Gaza City? And my third thought was, well, maybe if Hamas wasn't building so many tunnels, they could build some piers so they could bring food in and supplies and trade and goods and all the rest of the things that civilized nations do in the world. But this is to me, the root of the entire issue right there. It's not so much how long it's going to take or that we're doing it. I'm glad we're doing it, I suppose.
No, I'm not. This is an absolutely fundamentally stupid idea. The first rule of siege warfare is that any supplies that come into the besieged city go to the defenders, not to the civilians. This will lengthen the fighting.
Of course it will. Yes, of course it will. The reason I say I said I'm glad they're doing it is because we don't live in a world now where the traditional rules of warfare apply. It's all optics now. Now it's all about optics. It's all about the reason that they attacked Israel in the first place was so that Hamas could produce pictures of suffering Palestinians. That was the play. Now the part about this that I find repulsive look, I don't like seeing innocent people suffering to the degree that there are innocent people there, and there are some innocent people there. But the government is Hamas. Hamas is the government. They should have had a pier there in the first place to feed their own people. They shouldn't have gone in and murdered these Israelis in order to gain the sympathy of what would have come from the inevitable counterattack. But ultimately, I just don't see the idea of rewarding somebody for murdering civilians. You know, this idea that now we can ship them more free stuff faster doesn't make a lot of sense to me. So I guess I'm kind of where you were, where you were talking about just a minute ago in terms of siege warfare. It's like, great, congratulations, we can get supplies to Hamas faster now and to the Palestinians faster. And so all you need to do, if you think about it, is go commit some more atrocities. Maybe you'll have two piers.
Well, I believe the idea of this temporary pier being assembled by the army isn't that Gaza City doesn't have any piers. It's that it's to be able to bring in supplies where we choose and not near the cities where most of the fighting
is. OK, well, that entire thing is an entirely different story. And now I feel like an idiot.
Well, no. It's not that at all.
It's not the first time either.
Well, it's not my first time today. But in any event,
the general reply stands, right?
Absolutely.
I'm glad that we can go and do things like this. This is what most civilized countries should be able to do, and this is what Hamas should have been able to do if it was spending its like I said, if they were building piers for commerce instead of tunnels for terrorism.
Yeah. Scott, there are a couple of things going on here that need to be thought about. One, and I talked about this briefly before, is that it's actually going to take 60 days, almost 2 months, to get this pier set up, because the transit time for this very slow-moving Army vessel is going to be more than 30 days. And then I don't know what all the rest of the time is, but the best guesstimate is almost 2 months to get this pier assembled. And Commander Salamander, a Navy mil-blogger who I follow, he's a Navy officer, retired, I believe, raises a couple of more issues. He says, in an area thick with poorly controlled hostile forces, with everything from snipers to anti-tank guided missiles, how do you work the force projection problem? And the second one is, what are your rules of engagement if you take fire? What if you're confronted with a wave of people wanting refuge on the ship? What if a ship's company goes missing ashore? All of these things that, if they're being thought about, I don't think they were thought about at the highest levels before this order was issued.
It's the president can promise that there will be no boots on the ground. But if you're going to start bringing in an engineering crew there to start a construction project, you're going to have boots on the ground. You've got to defend those people. So they need to be able to set up at least a perimeter for physical defense of that operation. You know, it reminds me of my grandfather first told me about this, and later, years later, I read about it. After the invasion of Normandy, the Allies built a couple of what they called Mulberry Harbors that were essentially deep water ports built out of largely out of sunken ships and various other kinds of detritus. And then they had a series of piers that were floating pontoon walkways, essentially, or carriageways. And they had a couple of these that were fairly major operations, although one of them was destroyed within a few weeks by a huge storm. Yeah, but the first Mulberry Harbor was operational within 12 days of the invasion. The second one, which is the one that survived the storm, over the next 10 months after the Normandy invasion, brought in some was where they brought in some 2.5 million troops, 500,000 vehicles, and 4 million tons of supplies. You know, so these things can be done. However, the Normandy invasion was being planned for a long, long time. And I don't know if we have if the general can just reach up onto his shelf and pull out the three-ring binder that says, hey, next time we have to create an artificial harbor with a pier, here's how you do it. My guess is there were some more sort of rudimentary planning or that had to go into what is the particular situation there in Gaza? What are those waters like? What is the terrain like under the water and beyond the water? And all those things that have to be taken into account. So like Bill, you know, I'm all for making sure that, you know, especially women and children who are non-combatants are being taken care of. But like Steve, I understand that when you have a situation where the people half the people are supportive of their terroristic government, and maybe the other half of the people are prisoners of their terroristic government, and you can't sort them out because nobody's going to say anything, that you've got a really tricky situation to not become the supply chain for Hamas, where you're essentially feeding their soldiers so that they can kill Israelis and continue this fruitless endeavor. I wish there were a way to just say, okay, ladies and gentlemen, all you innocent civilians, we're opening the gate. We're going to let you out. We have this place where you can go stay. Just leave, you know, and just let them flood to some place where there are a bunch of Quonset huts set up or something where they could live. You know, or you could go to your buddies in the rest of the Arab world who are such, you know, lovers of the Palestinian people and say, look, your people need you. Why don't you use some of your immense oil wealth to build some villages where these people can live? They're not, I mean, it sounds like a lot of people, but they're not that many people. It's a pretty small area, and a couple of million people can be absorbed into the surrounding Arab countries. But Nobody's thinking that way. We all know that eventually Gaza is going to be reconstituted as a Palestinian territory, with or without Hamas, and that the spirit of Hamas will never die. So, you know, I'm torn on this, honestly, Steve. I think, you know, we need to do what we can. I know they can only bring in something like, I think it was like 33,000 MREs that can be dropped from airplanes on a given load, but doesn't go very far.
You reminded me of, Scott, there were Palestinian complaints on Twitter that, number one, the MREs sucked. No kidding. And
ask
number two, they claim that five Palestinians were killed by falling pallets of MREs.
Well, unless the parachute failed, then that's a Darwin Award problem.
Yeah,
exactly. Number one. And number two, what's going to be interesting for me personally is going to be if this thing gets built, assuming that they don't blow up the ship or murder all of the engineers or whatever else, because the thing about a pier is it connects to the ground, right? We know that the Hamas is on the ground, and we know that the pier is connecting to a ship that's on the water, so somebody somewhere is going to get a chance to shake hands or shoot at each other. But the thing that's going to be interesting to me is going to be the physical reception of the aid supply.
Yeah.
When we went to help Russia in during the famine that the Bolsheviks brought about, the American Relief Association went over and fed 10 million Russians who were starving to death because of communism, and Lenin took some of the food that we were giving to his people, including all of the food that was coming from his people, sold it on the international market for hard cash so he could fund his Comintern so that he could overthrow the government of the United States. That's one kind of a welcome. The other kind of the welcome that you could conceivably get is the kind of welcome that we got when we did the Berlin airlift. Now, in that particular case, when these airplanes landed, we did not have the military manpower to unload the planes fast enough. Once we really caught our rhythm, once we really started to get this down, we were bringing planes in every 20, 30 seconds. And in that case, Steve, the West Berliners themselves were lining up, rolling up their sleeves and unloading those planes just as fast as they could. And they were waving at the Americans when they came in and waving at them when they went out. So I'm going to be very curious to see what the reception to largesse is in terms of you know, my opinion of the presumably innocent people in Gaza. But if I see something like, yeah, you Americans can just haul it off and just leave it over here and we'll get to it later, that kind of thing, you know, you get one boat, that's it, you get one shipment, then I'm going home like we did in with the American Relief Association.
Yeah. You know, the most humane thing to do is to let Israel finish this just and necessary war as quickly as possible. A soldier who's too hungry to fight can't fight. That's good. It's sad that it happens to civilians, but they can fatten back up after the war. These are cold truths, but they are truths. Mm-hmm. The most humane thing you can do is to end this thing as quickly as possible, and Joe Biden is doing the inhumane thing, period. I just also like to add that I think Bill nailed it when he mentioned the optics, but there is an angle to the optics that he didn't get to, so I'll mention that now. This isn't about the humane thing or the inhumane thing, but it is about optics in Michigan. It's not about feeding hungry Arabs in Gaza. It's about winning votes back from Arab residents of Michigan who have turned their backs on Joe Biden because of his support for Israel. And so he's going to lengthen this war. He's going to get people killed to try and win a state in the Electoral College in November. And that's your right angle on that. Brought to you by the members of BillWhittle.com. Thanks so much for watching, and we'll see you next time.